Welcome to Prima's 2023 podcast series. My name is Shonda Ragland. I am the Senior Director of Education and Training at Prima. On this Prima podcast, Stephen Roper will discuss understanding open source investigations and risk management. Stephen is a partner at DigiStream Carolinas. We will also be joined by Prima's Education Coordinator, Taekwon Gilbert. Taekwon will moderate the discussion. Enjoy the podcast.
Thank you for joining us today, Stephen.
My pleasure.
So for starters, what is open source intelligence?
So open source intelligence, or as it is known by shorthand, OSINT, is really the collection and analysis of publicly available information, the emphasis being on publicly available. That can be publicly available background records on a subject of interest, publicly available social media content about a location of interest, but it is a combination of all of those different information sources in order to, make an actionable decision based on that information.
What is the difference between open source intelligence and social media investigations?
I'm confident there is a better analogy than the one I'm going to give you, but the best sort of distinction I can make between social media and open source intelligence is you wanting to shop for a new chair. Social media investigations or research is equivalent to a printout of that chair, whereas open source intelligence research is a 3D printing of the chair, meaning the object of interest, whether it be a person, location, or piece of furniture in this analogy, has more depth to it. There's layers of information that legitimize the surface level findings you're observing. The most sort of common challenges faced in what we'll broadly call desktop research, and that can be social media or OSINT, is this capture date problem. And most commonly it is encountered when you have a, let's say, work comp claim, which is a case type that, we commonly encounter with this type of research. And you've got an individual claiming a low back injury, and lo and behold, on Instagram, there's photos of them skydiving or participating in a marathon. When I started, and gosh, this would have been almost over 11 years ago, when I started, that desktop research was strictly the social media component, right? If we were tasked to investigate a person of interest, the challenge was mostly finding all of the profiles and social media accounts of that individual and hoping that, there would be online activity that would sort of confirm or refute our suspicions about the legitimacy of their alleged injury. And if their alleged injury, say, was October 1st, and we had content posted on Facebook dated October 15th that showed them skydiving, that was considered a home run a decade ago. Now, open source intelligence, again, going back to this idea of depth with the research conducted, does not stop at just the uncovering of accounts on individuals of interest, that's the start. It now involves tapping other sources of publicly available information to further buttress what the online content is suggesting. So to go back to the person photographed skydiving on October 15th, now the challenge becomes, okay, they said they were injured on October 1st. We've got this photo of them skydiving October 15th. What else can be done to, if not confirm they went skydiving post date of loss, at least triangulate a date range that lets us say with more confidence this was taken, you know, October 3rd or 4th, whatever. And so, again, with the skydiving, and this is kind of tapping from an actual sort of real case example, additional research that, you know, is done beyond just that social media photo on Facebook of them skydiving would give us, you know, the skydiving company that this person signed up for, which would then lead to a release of liability form that they had to sign before they went skydiving, which would, on that release of liability form that could be retrieved, have an actual date that that form was signed, which would say, we'll just, you know, throw out October 4th. And so that photo taken in conjunction with a physical record of a liability form in this example would kind of give you that kind of tangible proof of that photo actually existing post date of loss or being taken post date of loss. So again, open source intelligence or OSINT research is additional layers of information that go beyond just the surface level and support what it is you're finding in one specific format. Another example, and it's strictly a social media example, is so if, you know, one challenge of desktop research is confirming the actual date a photo or video was taken. Another challenge that has its applications is locating where that photo or video was taken. And, you know, with Zillow specifically, with the sort of online realtor websites now, a lot of geolocating can be done with simple, you know, TikTok, Instagram videos showing the interior of a house and then cross-referencing that interior with something on Zillow or Redfin or Realtor, whatever. So it's, you know, the distinction between a social media investigation or social media research and open source intelligence is that it's just there's more depth, more heft to the research done. And I think that's just a natural sort of evolution of desktop research by virtue of, you know, social media. It's now sort of a commonly used resource or tactic, and the questions about the legitimacy of content, specifically, you know, the date and time certain things were actually captured, come up. So OSINT is just a evolution of desktop research that attempts, when possible, to further legitimize notable findings, whether it be online or in background records. So yeah, again, a picture of a chair printed out or a 3D printer model of the chair. That's kind of the analogy I'll draw when it comes to that question as an answer.
What other information can be uncovered using open source intelligence research that is not online?
And this is sort of the beauty of OSINT research, because while social media is, of course, an invaluable resource when it comes to, again, researching subjects or locations / events of interest, there is still a depth of knowledge available to all of us, to anyone, that is publicly available, that while the internet certainly expedites us finding and makes easier us to get our hands on quicker, is still very much accessible to us without an internet connection. And it goes into, you know, background records, criminal records on subjects of interest, certain financial records, with the most notable being bankruptcy records, because there's a wealth of information in bankruptcy records that can paint even more of a picture of kind of what an individual's story is. There's driver records. You know, if you were limited, quote unquote, to only using public records on a subject of interest, and you believed that they were not as, again, we'll go with like kind of a work comp claim, not as injured as they claim to be, or that they were running a side business as a, you know, landscaper, you could, and in my experience, can / have prove those suspicions. I've had, you know, arrest records filed after a date of loss where you actually retrieve the police report, which, again, is public record, or the arrest record. And the police report in that record will describe an individual alleging bilateral shoulder injuries as lifting a 200-pound individual up at a bar and throwing them, you know, to the ground. So you've got kind of an unexpected source, post-date of loss physical activity by virtue of a police account detailing the subject acting beyond their restrictions, stated restrictions. Or again, the sort of outside employment scenario, going back to that bankruptcy record and the wealth of information in it, you know, when someone files for bankruptcy, they have to provide all of their sources of income. And if, again, you were just limited, quote unquote, to pursuing background records to kind of scratch this itch of figuring out whether someone had a side gig as a landscaping company, well, their sources of income, we've had side businesses, you know, listed that, again, are, have been, could be landscaping companies. The other thing, you know, pivoting now to kind of like locations and events of interest, and with that, the most common case example we've encountered is, you know, motor vehicle accidents. You know, CCTV cameras, I won't say all CCTV cameras and the footage they collect are available to you or public record. In fact, you know, I know big box stores and certain businesses are a little more tightly guarded about whom they release footage to, but a lot of, you know, details about car accidents don't really need online research at all beyond potentially, you know, a look at Google Maps to just turn and look and see what businesses or what traffic cameras might have been in the vicinity of the scene of an accident. But even then, just physically canvassing and, you know, knocking on doors or calling will more than likely yield footage of an accident, not to mention just, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of Ring cameras that are out there and contacting homeowners to see if they're willing to, you know, release the footage of whatever occurred in the view of their doorknob camera. So, I mean, there's a lot that is still available offline, especially when it comes to just publicly available records, you know, and, I mean, in back in the day, and I sound now like, you know, even newspapers, you know, just the information held in them and, you know, people that are quoted and yes, newspapers do exist offline in a physical form. I assure you, I know that's maybe a foreign concept to some of our younger audience members, but it's surprising how much is available to the public, even without an internet connection. And if there's ever a question about kind of, you know, what is accessible, the phone is a very, very powerful tool. And simply asking a local county courthouse, you know, what their policies are, how you might go about retrieving X, Y, or Z record, you know, contacting the Secretary of State for a specific state of interest where there's a business you want to learn more about. It just sometimes takes some polite pestering to, you know, unearth some things that may not even actually be available online. It may only be available with kind of a in-person physical record as opposed to something found via Googling.
What are the benefits or utilities of open source intelligence investigations and risk management?
So I would love to say the benefits or utilities are whatever you need open source intelligence to be, but the more, you know, truthful / kind of honest answer is the benefits / utilities of OSINT research are whatever the investigation allows you to uncover. You know, I've cited a Facebook photo of someone skydiving and retrieving a physical copy of a release of liability form to prove the capture date of the photo. I've talked about a bankruptcy record potentially proving outside or concurrent employment, or an arrest record proving post-date of loss physical activity. And while those are / can happen, those have / can happen, it's really, you know, whatever the investigation leads you to and opens the door for you to continue to explore. The way I, you know, with another analogy, you know, investigations in general, which, you know, OSINT research very much is two things, but like it, to me, it is a lot like fishing. You know, you go out to a lake and you sort of cast your line, similar to the way you start looking into a person of interest. And, you know, you're not guaranteed to catch that big fish, nor are you / we guaranteed to find someone that is an Instagram influencer and posts videos twice a day of their Cirque du Soleil performances when they're also claiming a back injury or something. You know, like that just doesn't happen. But when you do get that bite, and when you do find that bit of information, whether it be online or in background records, you want to make sure that the methodology, that the, I don't know, the, I'm not a fisherman, so I don't know why I do this analogy, but why that, you know, make sure that wire or that line doesn't snap. You want to make sure that you can reel that fish in, or that you can squeeze / extract every bit of information to legitimize without a single shred of doubt your findings online or in background records. So, you know, we've had examples of an investigation into, you know, a widow and alleged boyfriend and trying to find the, you know, the seriousness of that somewhat kind of, what's the word, supported, or we find more insight into that relationship dynamic by virtue of the daughter having a vehicle registered in that boyfriend's name, suggesting that, you know, he purchased a vehicle for this widowed woman's daughter and is, you know, more than just friends as might be claimed. Obviously, you know, the parachuting example, you know, there are some, I guess, for the case types we encounter on the work comp and liability side of things, some kind of industry standard red flags. And open source intelligence research is really meant in some form or another to, if not outright, prove the existence of these red flags for subjects of interest, at least let you know if it's worth pursuing further. And those red flags can be anything from, again, post date of loss physical activity, financial distress, Monday morning injuries, which, you know, can raise an eyebrow when someone Monday morning comes into work and 30 minutes into their shift claims a knee injury, to litigation history. You know, the utilities of open source intelligence, OSINT research, are varied, are multiple, and you know, again, are limitless almost, so long as the information is there for you to pursue and the methodology is there for you to understand how to pursue it. I have been doing social media / OSINT research for, again, over a decade, and I genuinely believed after like year four, I would be looking for a different line of work because people would wise up to the fact that online activity yields real-world consequences. There has been a shift, don't get me wrong. You know, it's less and less common for us to look into a John Doe or Jane Doe and have that person by themselves have multiple profiles / accounts, all public and wide open, and, you know, notable content, you know, just pouring out from every, you know, photo, captions, all sorts. That's not quite as common. You know, the sort of saying is, I used to go an inch wide and a mile deep, meaning it was just that person, that one person that would require my attention, require my focus for, you know, a proper investigation. Now, because of this rise in desire for anonymity, exclusivity, it's a mile wide and an inch deep, meaning I'm looking for the subject of interest's accounts, but I'm also looking for their friends and their family and looking into their publicly available information online to see what content about the subject is available there. So it's, you know, OSINT has evolved in more ways than one, again, by first just the inclusion of additional information sources to, again, with more certainty, confirm certain bits of content online. But then it's also behooved us to broaden the searches on subjects of interest to include more than just them, so that those same utilities / benefits enjoyed 5-7 years ago are still there, just accomplished a little bit differently. So again, it's OSINT research is capable of providing whatever whatever you're looking to accomplish, so long as the information is out there to be found that accomplishes what your goal is. I hope that makes sense.
Certainly does. Is open source intelligent research admissible in a formal legal setting?
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of OSINT, which, you know, again, going back to the first question and what is OSINT, you know, everything you're using to base a decision on or come to a conclusion on is publicly available information. Again, the conclusions reached are more convincing when you have multiple sources of information reinforcing a specific, you know, point of interest, I guess, but all of it is publicly available, which thus would make it admissible. You know, when conducting OSINT research, it's important to to preserve the content or information you've uncovered that you deem notable for your decision making. And even more important, well, just as important as the preservation of whatever content you've uncovered online or you've, you know, retrieved via a FOIA request is the documenting of the process of making sure you can recite the breadcrumb trail you followed that led to the Instagram account for the real estate business, or that led to the Facebook business page of the landscaping company. It's just making sure that you don't just throw a pile of photos and, you know, records down on a table and just say, here it is, but you can share how you obtained it. Because again, it's all publicly available, so it's all admissible, but there's, you know, the possibility of questions coming up, oh, how did you get all this? Like, where did this come from? And being equipped with, you know, the step-by-step process that led you to these points of information just further legitimizes, you know, the evidence you've submitted. So yes, it is.
We've reached the end of our podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Please visit the Prima website to hear other Prima podcasts, view upcoming Prima webinars, read Prima blogs, and learn about other Prima educational resources. Be sure to check us out on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and our very own Prima Talk. Have an amazing day.